Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome
Hello.
to our Feline Division Chat and Chuckle for March. Our guest today is Beth. You probably have seen Beth before at some point. Beth is also on our cat committee here. So we're going to talk about shifting perspectives in cat behavior. What does that mean? That means we're going to talk about some of the things that our cats do that are normal behaviors, but people perceive them as, unwanted or annoying or naughty or bad or whatever word you want to call it. So, Sunny's hair in my mouth. We were talking before we went live about my cat Sunny and how he thinks it's fun to now walk out the front door now that it's nice out and go and sit in the grass and eat grass. And he's 20, so almost, so he can't really do anything bad in my book, but
No, Sunny doesn't do anything bad. No. And I was and you were saying, oh, he learned a new bad behavior going out and chewing grass. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with chewing grass?
No,
Think
I think
that's
a lot of times when cats are doing stuff that I will label it as things we wish they didn't do. Okay, a lot of times when cats are doing stuff that we wish they didn't do, it's because they're showing us what they want or what they need. There's no way that a cat can just go up to you and say, "Laura, I'd like to chew some grass. I'd like to sit in the sunshine. How can we arrange that?" And so, because they lack those verbal skills, they're showing us in other ways. And I think a lot of times that's the case. They're just showing you, "I need this. I want this. This is going to be fun for me," whatever. And they have a limited repertoire of ways they can communicate that. And so they're communicating that in a way that they're really hoping will be effective, and very often in a way that has worked for them before and we have responded to. So that's, accidental reinforcement. So that's like the thing that happens when they knock your phone or your watch or whatever off your nightstand in the middle of the night. And then you get up and engage with them. So now they're like, "Oh, cool. When I'm bored in the middle of the night, all I need to do is knock this thing down, and my humans get up and engage with me." Okay.
Yeah, or they yell at you and you're like, oh, just shut up, very fierce food. Yeah.
Cats are amazing trainers. They know how to train us to do a lot of things. I think sometimes they're more aware of the training situations than we are, because they're really, they're sort of really thinking about operant conditioning all the time because it's really the way they learn. So they're also learning what we respond to.
It's mostly like negative reinforcement.
How do you
Like
mean?
you give me so like you give me something, or I'll stop yell I'll stop yelling if you give me something.
Right. So they apply
So
some
they're using it.
condition.
I'm not saying that we are using it. I'm saying that they're.
So they're applying some condition that we want to stop. And then we do something and it stops,
Exactly.
I think that's very, very perceptive.
So
I
I
on my business Facebook page last night, I don't know if either of you saw it, but I was just sharing. This was timely because now I'm like, this is the perfect story for this conversation. I was just sharing how, if you're not familiar with me, if you don't know me, I have eight cats at home, and it's a thing where please don't have eight cats because you spend your entire day every day providing for those animals because it's a full-time job. But anyway, with that many cats, I have problems from time to time. And the past, few weeks, I have one of my cats, Puff. He's a blind 3-year-old cat. He's really likes to pick on my other cat, Juniper, who is an 8-year-old cat who really just likes to be left the heck alone. She's very independent. She likes to mind her own business. For some reason, he just wants to torture her. So I was getting very frustrated because he wants for nothing. He's outside on the catio right now. He's been out there all day. He's got a million toys. We get so much, like he's got food puzzles. He does so much. But then I was like, okay, clearly I am not meeting his needs in some way. If he's feeling the need to do this on a daily basis, something is not right. So I always tell that to my clients too. Like, I was still pretty frustrated and irritated and annoyed that I had to deal with this, but I started tracking when the fights were happening and realized, they were all around the same time generally. And of course, he was picking like 15 minutes after I went to bed. So he learned that if he started a huge screaming fight, I would get up out of bed. So I changed up the bedtime routine, and he's got now even more stuff to do, and like he's doing stuff and he's busy. And essentially my plan is I keep him very, very, very busy for an hour before I go to bed. And this is day 4 or day 5 and no fights. So
Amazing.
I'm like, the moral of the story, I guess, is like it was something, the reason for the fighting was he was not being a bad cat. I mean, he is a bad cat. We'll throw it out. But if I want to be technical and correct, he was not being bad. He was just expressing his feelings and his needs. And now that I have figured out what those needs are and met those needs, fingers crossed, I have resolved the behavior issue. So I th thought that was a good story. I shared that on my business Facebook last night.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the other important thing that you touched up on there is the importance of tracking and logging. And this is a lot of times when clients, whether it's dog clients or cat clients, come to me and they say, "My animal does this and really annoying thing or this weird thing," and I'm like, "Well, let's log it. Let's track it for a bit. And let's figure out what the trigger is and what kind of work." And I always tell my clients, very behind every behavior, there is a need, right? So let's see what need is this behavior fulfilling at in this instance, because I don't know unless I know the context. And what happens is a lot of times once they start tracking this and logging, they don't even have to tell me. They themselves figure it out because it starts jumping out at them. But just like you said, oh, it's always 15 minutes after the bedtime. It's always 15 minutes before the mealtime. It's always it's kind of after we've had a big walk. It's always, so it's, I mean, it's not really sexy when you like. I feel like maybe clients are a little bit disappointed when I say, "Hey, let's start making a log." But it
I
really
actually
helps.
think it is sexy, and I think people feel very empowered by it. I do this too because everybody starts with Sparky whines all the time. Okay. No, animal, including us, does something all the time except breathing. Breathe all the time. But other than that, nothing. There's nothing we do. There's no behavior that we do all the time. Sparky whines all the time. And then I start with, well, what does that mean? Does that mean every day? 10 times a day? What does that mean? But when I start saying, let's track it, I say, let's get data. Let's be scientists and think about this in a scientific way, behavior science way. Let's get some data. What times of the day does it happen? What was happening before? How do you usually react? Let's get some data because if we have some data, it will be much clearer what's going on, what Sparky is trying to tell you here. And that will make it so much easier for us to solve the problem. So there is a kind of a way to make it sexy too. You know, let's get some data. And people actually get excited about that. I've had clients call me, you know, after a couple of visits and we're doing just follow-ups, and they're like, so I'm putting my scientist hat on now, and I'm going to say, you know, and if we can get them thinking in that way, that's so great. Because I know most of us, when we meet someone in the beginning, we're meeting someone because they're having a problem, and they're having a problem. So they're very quickly going to, my cat's a jerk. My cat's a bad cat. My cat's a jerk. My cat's scratching the couch because he's spiteful. My cat's peeing on the couch because he's vengeful. Like, you know, he doesn't care about me. He's waking me up in the middle of the night because he doesn't care about my feelings. You know, because something has happened, or they wouldn't be calling us. And yeah. So when you get them to shift that way of thinking, to start thinking like a scientist, then they often on their own let go of those labels. They're like, okay, if I'm going to put my scientist hat on now and see that my cat is scratching the couch because I've given him a horizontal scratcher, but not a vertical scratcher, you know, not because he hates me, because he hates the couch, or because he's vengeful, you know, but because scratching is a natural behavior. And I have not given him an outlet for that, that he deems to be appropriate. A lot of times it's like another thing, especially with scratching, where you go to someone's house and they have the scratcher, but it's either on the back of the doorknob, so it's moving like that, or it's the kitten scratcher, it's this tall, right? Which should be banned. I don't think pet supply stores should sell it because it's of no use. And they say, but I gave him a scratching post. And then so then it's like, okay. I always usually take the short scratching post and I put it next to the couch or whatever it is they're scratching. What's different about this couch and this scratching post? What's the difference? You know, what's the difference here? And your cat is telling you what he needs. He's telling you the kind of surface he needs to scratch by scratching on the couch. He's telling you, I need something taller. I need something more sturdy. I need something wider. So when we see that, look at it that way. Okay, then it's like, no longer my cat is the vengeful, spiteful jerk who lives in my house. Why did I let him in here?
I like seeing people's perspectives change, especially in those situations where the cat is peeing on the couch or peeing on the bed, because those people are usually the people who are most upset about the cat
and
peeing.
Rightly so.
Yeah,
right.
I would be too. And I'm like, your cat isn't being spiteful. He's actually telling you he loves you. And they're like, oh. And I had a case recently where the cat was peeing on the couch and we collected data and found out that he was only peeing on the side of the couch where the husband sat, only peeing on the husband's side of the bed. And he was specifically seeking out those spots. And that was just a huge realization, because we figured out the husband was his favorite person. So he wanted to, you know, and I think it never makes people feel totally better that their couch and their bed are being peed on, but at least they're able to look at it from a new direction there. And just once you explain that, and I was all of these litter box cases, I had one this morning where she asked me, what do I do if I catch my cat in the act spray when he's spraying on the wall or whatever? And I was like, it's really, really hard, but I wouldn't do anything, because he's communicating to you and he is telling you something, and it's good to listen to what he's saying so we can collect information. So I think, especially in those really frustrating situations, that whole reframing, and we're all good at our jobs, like being very sure that you are explaining exactly why and what the reason behind the behavior is, and how we know that, makes such a huge difference.
And I think a lot of it is talking about behavior in a different way. And, you know, it's that thing about avoiding labels. But you can empathize at the same time. I mean, I certainly know when I see someone, if my If my cat was peeing on the couch, I'd be super upset. I foster kittens all the time, and they pee on the couch, and I am not happy about that. When I foster kittens now, there's a shower curtain on the couch and in the foster room because I am tired of replacing the upholstery there. So I get it that you're not happy, and so I always start by empathizing. Oh, that's terrible. Of course, that's upsetting to you that the cat would be on the couch. Yes, it does smell very bad. It's so upsetting, and it's upsetting to your cat too. That's the thing. So let's figure out what's upsetting him.
Yeah, I've said that to people before too, where I'm like, your cat. In some cases, I mean, in some cases they don't want to use a litter box at all. But most of my litter box cases, I'm like, your cat is stressed out that they don't have an appropriate bathroom. And those not necessarily in stress cases, but like in those cases where they have a litter robot or Breeze or something crazy that the cat hates, and I'm like, you hate it, but so does your cat. He doesn't want to do this either.
And I think that's a lot of it. And then the other thing is, I think we often have unrealistic expectations of our animals. And I'm going to tell you a story about that. A couple of years ago at Thanksgiving, so I always have this gigantic turkey at Thanksgiving, and I carved the turkey and put all the food on the table. I have a kind of an open kitchen, so you can the kitchen counters extend a little bit into where my dining table is. I finished carving the turkey. I left the carcass in the pan on the counter, and we all sat down to eat. One of my cats is an enormous fan of poultry, a really big poultry fan. And at a certain point, my back was to the kitchen counter, and someone pointed over and started laughing. And she had, because it was a very large turkey, inserted herself from her neck up into the cavity of the turkey carcass and was chewing at it from the inside.
Would be like, you know what? Good for you.
And I
My
just
bad.
laughed and I said, this is my fault. I shouldn't have left it out. And that's the truth of it. It is unrealistic to expect an obligate carnivore who I know loves turkey and is certainly able to jump up on the kitchen counters, but who typically knows not to. Like when I'm cooking, she doesn't jump up on the kitchen counters because I'm there. But in that situation of enormous temptation, unattended turkey carcass, big turkey smell, all of that, good for her. She's not jumping up on the table. But this is completely unattended, inserting her head into the turkey. And I turned around and laughed and I said, that is my fault. It's unrealistic to expect an obligate carnivore to leave alone their favorite food unattended. I mean, think about your 3-year-old whose favorite food is ice cream, and you leave a bowl of ice cream on the coffee table where they can reach it, and you leave the room and you expect them not to eat it. That's unrealistic.
Yeah, and I especially when I have clients that are parents, and that's kind of the analogy that I say. If you don't want your children to eat candy all day, you're not going to leave a bowl of candy on the table, right? You're just going to put the candy somewhere. So let's do the same thing with dogs slash cats, right? Let's just not, because it's not fair. It's just not fair.
It's not fair. And you get that thing of he knows it's wrong. And it's like, no,
No,
he
he doesn't.
doesn't. He knows that so sometimes, depending on the behavior, he knows that when you're in the room, you obstruct his behavior in some way. He might know that when you're present, you obstruct his behavior. Doesn't know the moral equivalency of why that might be.
No.
But he
Cat
certainly
people.
also knows that when you're not in the room, his behavior can continue unobstructed.
There's this really good quote, and I don't remember who said it, but I remember it really clearly because I discovered it early on in my career, and it was something like thinking of the animal as behaving badly predisposes you to think of punishment, and thinking of the animal as communicating leads you to want to make a change and want to help. I can't remember. It said really eloquently, but it's something like that. I think that's just a good something I try to share with people. And I remember, like, another thing that I say all the time is your cat isn't giving you a hard time, he's having a hard time. That's
It's like the
my
same thing about kind of like the reactive dogs.
Yeah. I say that to people a lot.
Yeah.
I had one
I'm
client.
sorry, I had a moment of wonky internet there.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
But
I'm
just
back
so you know,
now.
there is like a thunderstorm rolling in here. So if I disappear suddenly, that's because we've lost something here. Power, internet. I
Well,
don't know. I'm in the middle of nowhere.
fingers crossed. Yeah, I had a client that I made her recite, like, write it down on a piece of paper and take it with her into her cat reintroduction sessions because she would get so frustrated. Okay.
Yeah. All right, I think Beth is frozen.
Yeah, she's going to log off and back on again. She's not having a good
Oh,
time.
okay. All
Well,
right. Okay, well, hopefully you're not going to be the only one left in this call,
I
Laura.
know, then I'll just have to talk to myself.
Well, you can talk to Sunny, I guess.
Sunny left.
Sunny, oh my God.
I know. Well, if anyone watching has any questions or comments or things that they want to say or have answered,
Or a story of your own with a
yeah.
client,
Yeah.
pop it in the comments.
Yeah, you can talk to us. We're nice. What else?
Usually.
Yeah, usually, sometimes.
I think, you know, the part of that kind of, because we do anthropomorphize animals a lot and our pets, I think, even more than that. And I catch myself doing it with my own animals a lot, even though I should know better. And it has, you know, it can have a good side and a bad side, right? Like if we anthropomorphize something, we usually way more empathetic towards it. But at the same time, we do apply the ethics and morals, which the animals don't have. And here's the thing that I don't know if I already said it. What really gets me is a lot of times people will assign really complex emotions or really complex things to animals, like feeling guilty. But at the same time, they will deny them very basic things like being scared or feeling pain. And it's usually the same people, right? Because you know, when you we talk with a lot of kind of trainers that use aversives and use punishment, they will assign guilt. Like they would say, oh, he's feeling guilty, or he's being a jerk, or he should know better. But at the same time, they were like, oh no, this shock collar doesn't feel it, like it's not painful and it's not causing distress. They don't feel that. They feel that, but they don't feel that because it's very convenient for us, I guess. I don't know. Or
Yeah.
maybe it's, or maybe humans are we as humans we are just predisposed to punishment.
I think we are. I think punishment is self-reinforcing. That's a really big issue with it. And it feels good. It feels like you've done something. And yeah, that's why I think just reframing it to communication is what I'm always calling it,
Yeah.
people. I'm like, no, we don't want to stop him from doing that because we want him to keep telling us when something is wrong
Yeah.
and not go and find something else to do or go and do it in secret, especially with
Yeah.
being where we won't
Yeah.
find it next time. So, yeah, that's sad.
Right.
And I think, what was I gonna say? Oh, I was gonna say, I think with the stuff like guilt versus fear and et cetera, like I think I'm gonna sound like I'm terrible at my job, but I think I used to glaze over body language a little too much. Like I felt like I had so many other things to talk about, and I just kind of assumed that people knew the basics. And then I was like, wait a minute, like something clicked, and I was like, I need to be spending a lot more time on this. So now I do. And I think I should, it's, one of those things you learn on the job, because I also used to never ask people how often they clean their litter boxes because I assumed that everyone was, a hygienic, normal person. But I think I've noticed such a big difference recently in my clients now, where they are so much more capable of recognizing what their animal is feeling, when people just didn't know, like they didn't know basic stuff like what tail position meant or what the ear position meant and blah,
Yeah.
like so. To anyone listening who's not spending enough time on body language, start doing it.
It's like literally the first thing that
Hey.
I. Hey.
Hi, I'm
How do
so
you?
sorry. Not sure what's going on with my computer, so I'm going to restart it.
Okay.
But because my Wi-Fi just crashed.
Oh.
But it's working elsewhere, and it's working on other devices in my house, but somehow not on my computer. But meanwhile, I thought I would just come in by phone.
All
All
right.
right. Oh, that sounds great. We talk, so just to let you know, we were just started talking about body language and how we kind of assume that everyone can read the body language, but then it turns out that what it's not true. And I was about to say that the body language is about the first thing now that I talk to people about in my very first consult. And they do get, like, I actually literally give them the Lily Chin's doggy language and kitty language. So all my clients get it. And then, whenever I watch the videos, I will describe the body language to them, and I will say, "Hey, this is the ears. This is the tail position. This is that." And I also have them take a video of a cat or a dog and describe to me what they see.
And I
And
think
it's,
that's a great idea.
yeah. And you know what? It's crazy because I got that book to someone who had, like, it was a dog client, not a cat client. I've had dogs before, and he got this on the first session. And the second session, he's like, "Oh, so I've realized that when my dog is doing this and that, when I do this to my dog, and he's doing this, that means that he doesn't like when I do this. So now I stop." And I was so proud. That was such a moment. I was like, yes.
I know. I had
And I think cats are, I mean, people do have a hard time sometimes reading cats because their body language can be very ambivalent. The
Yes.
ears sometimes say one thing and the tail says something else and the eyes say something else. So the cats do often send out ambivalent signals and you have to read them as a whole and sort of take the preponderance of what they're saying. But the other thing I find a lot is that people, anytime their cat touches them, they interpret it as aggression, which is really interesting. That thing that cats do where you walk by them and they tap you on the leg, which is very often a kind of either, hey, pay attention to me, or hey, make something move in the house, or hey, you just walked by the treat jar and didn't give me any, or whatever. And I'm talking about the leg tap where the claws are in. So there's no harm done and no intention to cause harm. I can tell you how many people have interpreted that as aggression. And it's like the cat just touched you. Why do you think that's aggressive?
Wow, now Laura's disappeared.
We're having bad internet day. I'm sorry for everyone who's tuned in that we're having bad internet day. I apologize.
And I was
some
the
weird
one who
fluctuations.
That, I was the one who thought that was there, but it was going to disappear. With my middle,
and you're
goodness.
Actually having good internet day,
and I'm actually having well so far.
I'm
all right, okay.
I had to go unlock the door.
Yeah. Oh. You hear
is
the
Laura
fingers?
Back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, Laura is back. Yeah.
Okay.
So, which behaviors do you find yourself kind of most having to reframe that bad behavior and then telling people no, it's actually a natural behavior? Like, I
so
think
I too. I mean, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You, no, I asked you a question.
So there are two. I mean, the first one is really scratching. Because scratching is a natural behavior. There's no way that you can teach a cat not to scratch. So this, I don't want him to scratch anything. Sorry, then you don't need it. Then you need to get a gerbil. You know, I'm sorry, but this is not the pet for you. And that's kind of the reasoning behind let's take his claws off, let's cut his toes off, is I don't want him to scratch it. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm going to say, no, the answer is not to take his toes off. The answer is to get a different pet or to, you know, provide him with appropriate scratching surfaces in the first place. My cats don't scratch my furniture because they scratch with what I've given them because it's appropriate. So scratching is definitely the first one that I think needs to be reframed. But the other one is the idea of aloofness. My cat doesn't love me. And this goes back to what you said, Joanna, about body language. That people don't get it that if the cat is every moment that you're home, the cat is in the same room as you are. that actually means something. It's not a coincidence. And the fact that they're in the same room as you are, but not necessarily on the same piece of furniture that you're on, you know, it still has meaning. So I think a lot of times people don't see expressions of affection. And they assume my cat doesn't care about me. My cat doesn't love me. I've had people complain because the cat sits next to them but won't sit in their lap. And it's like, wow, your cat sit next to you when you sit on the couch? That's so sweet. You know?
Yeah.
I think Sunny has given everyone false hope, false expectations. Yeah. Sunny,
yeah.
But I think people don't recognize the signs of affection in cats, and they don't recognize that cats, you know, they're expressing an enormous amount of affection, but not necessarily the way we would. You know, I attended a seminar by Carolina Westwood a couple of months ago where she was talking about the way that we touch animals. And she said, you know, we're primates. And primates, you know, even when you look at other primates, not just humans, but primates tend to grab and hold and hug, you know, monkeys hug each other and touch each other all over their bodies and those kinds of things, which non-primates do not do. That's not their idea of affection. And so we have this, you know, sort of primate idea of this is what affection looks like. And we have to understand that for other kinds of animals, that's not what affection looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've explained to a lot of people that this is with cats who attack people that come into their home. But they'll say, but the cat went right up to them and started rubbing on their legs. And they went, but when they reached down to pet her, she bit them. And I'm like, she extended her hand for a handshake and the guest gave her a hug. So, I read something a long time ago on the concept of cute aggression, where we have, it's probably on similar, it's on a similar vein to what you're talking about, where we just feel like we have the right to touch and squeeze and just, you know, interact with anything that is cute in any way we want to. And it's perceived as aggression in a lot of cases by the cute things. And I think just the whole concept of like, we think that we have the right to touch any animal in the way that we want to.
I find it,
well, and that's... go ahead.
I find it a bigger problem with dogs because everyone has this expectation that a dog should enjoy being touched and should enjoy being petted by everyone. Mm-hmm. And then when the dogs kind of, bite, and it's and the dog's biting is a kind of tends to be a bigger issue from a cat biting. That's when I really have to reframe this thinking with the client. I had a client last year, and he had a German Shepherd puppy, German Shepherd young dog, and he nipped someone on their face because an unknown person put a face in his face, and they were like, my client's question was like, how do we know that he's not going to bite the person? I'm like, well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not put our faces into unknown dogs' faces, because there's this expectation, right? My dog or a dog, any dog should tolerate this. And I'm like, why? Like,
when I was working at the shelter, I have this is the there. I have so many stories, but this story in particular, someone had come in wanting to surrender a dog. For aggression, he had bitten a bunch of people or something. I don't remember. But that was the reason for surrender. And I'm standing out in the lobby talking to this person with this dog, and some random person comes around, like comes up and starts trying to touch the dog. And I'm like, do not touch the dog. Do not touch the dog. Do not touch the dog. And they're like, it's okay. I love dogs. I've had them my whole life. And I'm like, that dog is going to kill you, sir. And just like the pushback, like that guy was so offended that I would tell. And finally, I was just like, this dog has bitten multiple people. You need to leave. Like, it's a problem.
Well, this is something I talk about all the time, is that animals have the right to the integrity of their own body. They have the right to the integrity of their own body. And it's also true that just like us, there are people who like a lot of physical contact and people who don't. There are animals who like a lot of physical contact and animals who don't. For me, one of the greatest treats, I love a good massage. I really love it. And I had a friend visiting a while ago who was telling me, you know, he had flown in from the West Coast, telling me, I said, I have a great massage place. I can book you an appointment. He said, the idea of a stranger touching me is something that. Now, is it easier for me to say, you should enjoy a massage? I'm going to strap you to the table and make you take it. You know, of course not. He doesn't enjoy a massage. You know, I do. He doesn't. There we are.
And I try to reframe it when I'm talking to clients. I try to reframe it in a way, how much, like, if your animal, dog, or cat approaches you for the affection, how much cooler is that? And how much, I tell them, this is like the best feeling ever because they want to. Mm-hmm. It's not because you want to, but because they want to. And then they go, oh yeah, that would be fun. So I think that's kind of like the hardest thing is to reframe this for clients, because a lot of times, you know, clients have a little bit less of, I don't want to say respect towards animals than we do, but
they're just kind of naive, I think.
Or they don't we have a different kind of understanding or different feeling or thinking about the bodily autonomy of the animals, and some people don't, because it's not something. So
I do think that it's an older idea. you know, it's an older idea to look at an animal and say, this animal needs to take whatever I dish out. You know, that's kind of an older idea. And I think, you know, in the behavior world, we've certainly understood that animals need agency in their lives and that they actually live better with us when we give them agency. But that's a relatively new idea.
Yeah.
And so, you know, most people, they haven't read the studies that we've read, you know, and so that older idea that animals need agency, that they're like, there are little robots, that is pretty pervasive.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way people grew up treating their animals, because the idea their parents and the idea need agency in their lives. It's kind of a new idea.
And I think that that's why kind of for us, like the hard job that we have is to rephrase it and reframe it and present it in a way that is but still appeals to them and that still makes sense in their world and within their values in a way.
Right.
Because I can't impose my values on someone else, right? But I can see if I can take that idea that is still going to benefit the animal and rephrase it in a way that is going to make sense to the other person.
Right. And you can reframe it in a way where it's going to be clear to the human that it's going to benefit them as well, because this problem that they've called you about is going to be better interact with the animal with some agency.
Well, there you go, you logging in.
Do we have Beth now? We'll see. I don't know. No.
Yeah, coming back to like bad behavior. Yay, Beth.
This is because I have many devices.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm able to use them all.
That's always good.
I think that the bad behavior that I encountered the most, kind of people complain, or the most that is natural cat behavior. I don't know what those things are happening behind me. I don't know what my iPad is doing. There were just balloons that just flew behind me, and I don't know why. I don't know what my Zoom is doing, guys. But I think it's the jumping on the countertops. And I'm like, well, they're cats. They're going to jump on things.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that this is a countertop, and suddenly, like, the countertop is something that I should not be jumping on, because how would they know? I feel like that's one of the most common bad behaviors, but it's, let's see if I can still get the balloons. No, that wasn't it. I think that's the most common bad behavior, but it's not really a bad behavior, but it's just a natural cat behavior.
And that's jumping up on top of all kinds of things, up on bookcases, up, you know, all of those things, jumping up. It's a normal cat behavior. And again, you know, you need to provide things for the cat to do, but some of it, so my cats don't typically jump up on my countertops. And there's two reasons for that. The first is I recognize they need to be up high. So I have a cat tree that I kind of shift between my dining room table and my kitchen counter, depending on whether I'm eating or cooking. And it's small, but tall. And so that it just shifts back and forth. So they can be up someplace high, next to where I'm eating, next to where I'm cooking. But the other thing is, I know that when I'm cooking, I'm creating really big smells, and my cats can't help but be super intrigued by those smells. And so I let them smell everything. If they're sitting up on the counter, on the cat tree, and I'm, you know, cutting an orange, and they're going, what is that? I know they don't even like oranges. I just let them sniff it. You know, if I'm picking apart herbs, I give them a little piece, because they're, you know, they're typically not toxic anyway. And so if they want to eat it, fine. If they want to throw it off the cat tree, say, eh, now that I know what it is, I'm not interested. That's fine. You know, they want to sniff it, so I let them. And it's pretty much that simple.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe sometimes people get too hung up on this idea of also like perfect animal and the obedience and
and it's
instead of just letting be and letting go. It's like
I see a lot of people.
The other thing that these are animals. They are animals. They're not little kids. They're not furry children. They're actually animals. They live in a different world than you do. And this is, to me, this is the exciting thing about working with animals, is that they live in such a different world than me. But I know for other people, it's very frustrating. They don't hear what I hear. They don't see what I see. They don't smell what I smell. You know, their entire world is completely different. They don't sense what I sense. They don't think what I think. They're animals. They're completely different from me. How hard is it to understand another human, you know? And then magnitudes for another animal. We don't know them, and we have to respect that.
Yeah. And listen, I really listen. And I catch myself sometimes, but I kind of wanted to do something, or I thought, but this is going to be fun for my cat, for my dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, no, actually, I don't want to do this. And it's really disappointing to me. And I really have to, like step back and say, well, okay, that's fine. Let's give up on this idea.
You know, that's the sort of, I spent $200 on this cat tree, you will go on it.
Yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I brought my dog to this cool, really, really awesome place that, you know, we're paying a lot of money for, and we chose exactly because it's got huge grounds for her to walk around. And this morning she was like, no, grass is wet, not going. And I'm like, well, okay, well, we'll stay on the porch then. That's not what you want to do. Can't make you have fun. We want to make, and we do it to other people too, right? Mm-hmm. We tell them, oh, this food, I love this food, or I love this thing. You're going to enjoy it so much.
And it's motivated by love, because I enjoy this so much. I want to share that enjoyment with you.
Yes.
It's absolutely motivated in the best possible way. I don't want to say that it's not. I know that it's motivated by love, but in the end, we have to understand with other humans and with other beings that everyone is their own little being. Everyone really is their own little being. Every human, every animal, their own little being. Because you get that other thing too of, oh, my other cat liked this, but this, you know, what's wrong with you? My other cat likes it, therefore that's a representation of all cats, you know?
Yeah.
When you say, I've had cats my whole life, and you've had 5 cats over 30 years.
Yeah.
So you've seen every cat there is to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've had cats my whole life, and all my other cats responded to this. And it's like, well, this cat isn't, you know?
Yeah.
He's a different animal, and he's not responding to this.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry, something very loud just happened in the other room. I just closed the door.
Was that your, one of your cats being bad?
No, it was my husband being bad.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
Well, I'm sad that we didn't get any comments today.
Yeah, I know.
Your last chance, people. There are people watching.
So, yeah, I kind of want to just sort of emphasize this idea that, because I think we, you know, working as behavior consultants, we all understand the difference between normal and genuinely abnormal behaviors. But I think it's so important for ongoing understanding for us to sort of help our clients see what normal behaviors are. Because there comes a time when we're not involved in their lives anymore. You know, we're involved in their lives for a very brief period. And if they can start to, as a result of their interaction with us, not only resolve whatever problem they were having, but start to see their animal as a different being than themselves, with their own set of normal functional behaviors, then that's going to help them problem solve on their own, avoid getting angry, avoid getting frustrated down the road, which I think is so important. Because for me, when I've had a successful case, what's happening is that I'm confident is that that cup is going to be understood and safe going forward. That's kind of my measure of success. That cat will be understood and safe going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is those times when the client kind of, when they're not being really told, but when they start seeing things themselves and tell you, oh, this is why, or this is, he did this, and I think he did it because of this. And we're like, yeah, you got it. You don't need me.
Yeah, I mean, and those are great things because, I mean, and then here's the great thing about that. They're telling their friends now, all their friends who have cats, they're telling them. So this is the thing that I learned. When he does this, it's not because he's a jerk. It's because he just doesn't like this, but you can do something else, you know? And so that has an enormous ripple effect. All of that, all of the misinformation got around in some way, and the good information kind of gets around in the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, ladies. Yeah. What do you think? If we don't have anyone, we having like we all are having some internet issues today. We nearly got to the end without fully losing someone, and permanently losing someone, or losing ourselves like we did last month.
Yeah, I think we can wrap it up. Thanks for coming and hanging out with us, Beth.
This was really fun. I'm sorry that I disappeared, but at least I managed to get back in and back in again.
And you never really introduced yourself at the beginning. So if you want to plug yourself and your business quickly before we get off, you're welcome to do so.
So if you Google me, you'll find my website, and I do in-person behavior consults in the five boroughs of New York City. I have been doing them for 15, 20 years, somewhere in there, between 15 and 20 years. And I do a lot of radios and podcasts and some public speaking as well.
All right. Well, there you go. We'll see you all next month. And I don't remember what we're talking about next month. Let me look real quick. Next month, we are going to be talking with Caitlin Grayson about modifications for cats with mobility issues, which I'm actually really excited about because I have a lot of cats with mobility issues. So I hope that I learned something.
That's a great topic.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. So we'll see you guys next month. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye.